Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rucca. Today, we'll talk about the Clatsop State Forest. Our guests are two officials from the Astoria District of the Oregon Department of Forestry. Dan Goody is the district forester, and Ron Zilli is the assistant district forester.
The Oregon Department of Forestry manages for fire protection for forests, manages for administration of the Forest Practices Act, which regulates both state and private forest lands, and then also the state forest management, which here is the Clatsop State Forest. So we have three operational programs. They're all very important and many times intertwined. So it's kind of important, too, when we talk about forestry, we're not just talking about state forests. We're also talking about regulations that involve requirements for private forest landowners as well. And for fire is always a concern. As we've gone through three pretty brutal fire seasons, it's tapped all of us and our agency and our landowners to meet that need. That's what I'm responsible for, is overseeing all those programs. And then Ron here, as the assistant district forester, manages the state forest on the Clatsop State Forest here.
So in terms of private lands, your role is to make sure that the private landowners are abiding by the State Forest Practices Act. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that is correct. Through our protection unit forester, who I supervise, he's in charge of administering the Forest Practices Act, ensuring that reforestation does occur, that they are meeting the environmental protection needs as far as not getting mud into streams, that they're following the different aspects of the Forest Practices Act. Which does include the use of herbicides, which I know we'll probably talk about a little bit. So they work well with those folks on those lands, and spend a lot of time also working with small landowners, kind of the mom and pop small landowner that, you know, got 20 acres in the back, and helping those folks figure out how they can manage that small amount of wood and property behind their place, and so they can follow the act and get the different types of tax breaks and assistance that's allowed for forestry.
Well, you mentioned mud in the streams, and I guess it's probably worthwhile to point out that our forests give us more than trees. They actually give us clean water, they give us fishery, they do lots of other things.
Yeah, and clean air, sequester carbon, provide habitat for fish and wildlife. Forests are a neat place, and I think that's why, as a forester, I think I'm an environmentalist at heart. That's why you still go out in the woods every day. I was attracted to that. So I think that's part of why I became what I came. Didn't know I'd be sitting behind a desk most of the time now, but really enjoyed it in my younger years being out in the woods.
Well, let's get into the state forests themselves a little bit. Tell us about the history of the state forests.
Okay, I'll let Ron take over.
Okay, great. Roger, thanks for having us here today. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to actually share the state forest story, because it is it's a rich story, and it's a rooted in history story that if you don't understand it, it's difficult to connect, the past with the present, and then, how state forest discussions are going to be going on that might affect the future management of state forests. But the state forests, as most people know them in Northwest Oregon, were primarily either logged or burned, sometime between the early 1900s and the 1930s, late 1930s. There were some fires in the Tillamook County area, and particularly later than that, but they were generally logged and or burned in the early 1900s up to about the 1939 timeframe. These lands, once they were either logged or burned, the owners of those lands, they had a tax obligation to pay on them. But if you think of the economy at that time, if there wasn't a resource to extract for them, there was no interest in them to keep these lands. So a lot of people walked away from these lands, and they were abandoned and became tax delinquent. Well, even though they were abandoned and tax delinquent, the counties still had a tax burden that they had to pay to the state of Oregon on these taxes. And, this was becoming widespread statewide. By about 1930, there was almost 3 million acres statewide in Oregon that were cut over or burned over. It's an extensive amount of forest land in Oregon. And, something had to be done to change this. So there was a lot of discussions that went on during the 1930s with both county leaders in various counties and in the state government in Salem as well. And what resulted from that was a relationship in which these counties that had cut over or burned over tax delinquent lands that were unproductive could deed them to the Oregon Board of Forestry, and the forestry department would manage these lands. They would take ownership of them and manage them, but the counties would forever share in the benefits from those lands. And that's the model that we have today, is that they're Board of Forestry lands primarily. We do manage two types of lands. We manage Board of Forestry lands and common school lands as our primary lands that we manage. There's a couple little other nuances in there, small holdings, but those are generally the two types. In Northwest Oregon, they're primarily Board of Forestry lands, but there's interspersions of common school land in there, and those are lands that were granted to the state through the Admissions Act when the Oregon became a state. They were given every section 16 and 36. A lot of those were reorganized, and you know there's still some portion of those today, but that's generally the two types of lands we manage. And then you know, it was in 1939 when you know there was an act passed that allowed the legal transfer of these lands over to the Board of Forestry. And since then, they've been rehabilitated. There was a lot of work that had to be done in reforesting these areas. You know, a lot of them came back naturally. A lot of them were reforested, depending on what had gone on and you know when they were disturbed. Here in Clatsop County, the disturbances were generally earlier than the Tillamook fires. But there was a lot of effort over the first 20 years, you know, that the state started managing these lands, basically into rehabilitation, reforestation, environmental work that was going on these lands. And we didn't have any timber sales from these lands until the early mid-1950s. I think it was 1954 when we had the first timber sale off the Clatsop State Forest. So most of the effort was into reforestation, rehabilitation work in the early days of those lands.
And these lands stretch over, what, eight counties?
Today there's 15 counties that participated in this process of deeding the lands to the Board of Forestry. So there's 15 counties that deeded lands, and they all they're part of an organization called the Council of Forest Trust Lands Counties, and they, the counties are all beneficiaries in the lands today. So it's codified in statute, NORS 530, the relationship that the Board of Forestry has with the counties. When they deeded these lands away, it was clearly known that they would be revenue producing again and have a lot of different values in the future. But for the county deeding these away, they made some codified relationships that said when you harvest timber off these lands in the future, there's going to be a sharing of the revenue that comes off those lands. And it's still a model we live with today.
And even though there are 15 counties involved, by far the bulk of these lands are in Clatsop and Tillamook counties, aren't they?
That's correct. Those are the two largest land holdings.
And I understand Clatsop County is the sort of the largest revenue producer, even though Tillamook County has more forest. Why is that? What's the difference there?
Well, these lands, firstly, Clatsop County in general has great forest land. And Tillamook County, in large portions of it, do as well. But there's differences in just the origins of the land itself and then the history of the lands. Clatsop County has relatively gentle terrain and deep mineral soils, which are very good for growing, trees. We have a mild climate, abundant rainfall, and the soils here are very, very productive. So Clatsop County has some of the best, tree-producing ground in the world. Tillamook County has a little bit different geology. They've got a little steeper slopes and a fire history there that has, had very significant impacts on the site productivity, soil productivity over time there. Not in all portions of the county, but in portions of it. And, when the lands that were deeded to the state that were within Clatsop County ended up going into Board of Forestry ownership, they just happened to be some of the best of the best. So they weren't just unwanted lands. They happened to be in a deforested condition at the time, but it may not have been even known. But they are some of the best lands that exist anywhere in the world for growing forests. And we have a lot of those lands in Northwest Oregon.
Well, what specifically is the Department of Forestry's role or responsibility or charge? What is it that you are expected to do with these lands?
The Board of Forestry has, directed us to manage these. They have a rule called the Greatest Permanent Value Rule. It's an administrative rule that defines the purpose of state forest lands. And within that, it says we will manage for a balance of social, economic, and environmental outputs from these forests. And they define that with a variety of goals, within each of those, contexts of the greatest permanent value. And it's up to the board to establish policies that define the balance. And that balance is a really tricky part because it's a social-political system forests are. I mean, we understand the biological component of those, of forests, I should say a biosocial system, where we know about forest, tree physiology and how trees grow and everything, but it's affected by forest policy and what people want out of forests. But that's what we do today. We manage for timber production, but we manage for social aspects, which are recreation. And not just recreation, but social components are also jobs. And the social fabric and maintaining infrastructure, those types of things are very important to the social components of that. And then environmentally, we do a lot for maintaining forests as forests. We maintain healthy and productive aquatic systems, habitat for a variety of both native species and native threatened endangered species that are here. So it's really the full gamut. And we're charged with doing those all in an integrated manner on this landscape. So there's a lot of stakeholders that are involved in the state forest conversation and a lot of expectations that are on state forests.
Well, even your critics admit that you have a lot of different pressures on you, a lot of different interests to keep happy. Well, there's a lawsuit right now that Linn County is threatening to file. I don't think they've actually filed it yet. That would, I think, change that balance. Isn't that lawsuit asking that the forest be managed strictly for harvest, that the counties need the most possible money they can get out of them?
Yeah, as Ron explained, you know, greatest permanent value is the statute from ORS 530, is the administrative rule on how we are charged with managing the forest. The notice of intent is just that. It's a notice. We haven't received the actual suit yet, so we don't know what may be, and we can't speak to the details of, you know, that potential suit when and if it happens. But it is questioning through a different method the process is in place.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that even throughout this, though, we are still actively engaged with our partners. We work with folks at the county all the time. We work through special taxing districts, the fire departments. So we interact and exchange information with our partners on a daily basis. So it's a little challenging having a lawsuit potentially pending out there.
Sure.
Where you don't quite know who may or may not be a litigant.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have our day-to-day chores, and we move forward in a very professional manner. And so far, it's been a great group of folks here. You know, I've talked with several county commissioners. We make sure we don't cross the line. We talk about legal aspects, but we still communicate about issues. And, we communicate as far as revenue projections to the county and to the fire chiefs. Sometimes there's harvesting in their districts, and so they can work on their engines, and so there's a lot of just normal day-to-day stuff that we're really working on maintaining that through kind of this looming potential litigation, which always seems to squash that nice normal working relationship we have. And I think so far we've been doing well. Did want to add on about the expectations about the Clatsop State Forest is that it's a great forest, as Ron said, but people have super high expectations from all ends of the spectrum, whether it's from a completely economic perspective or a completely environmental perspective or a social recreation perspective. You've got folks from all ends of the quadrants wanting more and more and more, it is sometimes challenging to learn the art of no, or sometimes it's not compromise, it's just trying to find a way to engage and figure out what their values and concerns are and trying to best fit those needs as we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me mention that as we record this, which is a couple of days before it will actually be aired, that suit still hasn't been filed, and Clatsop County and Tillamook County at this point haven't decided whether they're going to be in or out of that suit.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Well, we've had on this program, speaking of critics, we've had on some folks from the North Coast State Forest Coalition and Sierra Club who took issue with one particular sale, and that was the Homesteader sale. And what they felt is, first of all, this is the first sale they've actually protested, and they felt that the Department of Forestry was cutting trees that were at least approaching old growth characteristics. Instead of other tracts that would have perhaps been of less value for those kinds of things. Old growth forest, is it something that, how much is there? How much old growth forest do we have left in the state forests?
Very little.
Yeah.
And that's just due to the history of the lands. The lands were basically all cut over, burned over, tax foreclosed on lands that we got. So therefore they were in a pretty, rundown condition, you could say, as far as lands go. So there's just little pieces here and there that were just, odd corners or, small areas, but there aren't any large expanses of intact old growth, true old growth, within the state forest system in Clatsop County.
Well, one of the things that came out in those programs was that we never will have any more old growth unless we let it grow. And one of their contentions was that this was an area that kind of looked like a duck and walked like a duck already and had those characteristics, and instead of letting it go, the Department of Forestry chose to cut it down instead of other tracts. So explain that. Why was that?
Sure. Well, to put that into context, we have what within our forest management plan, it sets out some objectives on, you know, what the forests are going to be. The overall forest management that we have, the forest management plan, Northwest Forest Management Plan, is based on something called structure-based management. And what is it? What it does, it prescribes that you're going to have a variety of forested conditions across your landscape in certain percentages. And there's five different stand types within, you know, the forest management plan. And two of those stand types are what we call older forest structure. And we have some names for them or labels for them. They're just basically a continuum of forest maturing. We have one structure that's called layered stand structure, another called older forest stand structure that's to emulate old growth conditions but in an accelerated time thing through active management, thinnings, et cetera. And we've very thoughtfully worked with our staff, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife biologists, our own internal biologists, to look at where on the landscape we would want to grow these conditions, because you're not going to have it everywhere. Again, it's a balance. And currently, there's 30% of the Clatsop State Forest and all of the state forests that are mapped to be matured and grown into these older and layered stand structure conditions. And for, you know, for our forest, that's a significant amount of ownership. So these particular stands that were within the homesteader sale are not unique. They do have some old trees in them. We acknowledge that. We've always known that. It was acknowledged from the pre-sale process on forward. And, you know, we had provided responses to the comments on the recognition of the concern they had around some of those older trees, because they're not old growth stands. And the trees they were referring to that they had old growth conditions around them were really trees that never got logged for whatever reason in the 1920s to the 1940s when these stands, you know, when the original logging occurred. So they were basically, you know, 30, 40-year-old trees out there, open-grown trees, when the lands went into state ownership. And then they were, you know, reforested around them, and now they're just some bigger trees that are 40, 50 years older than their neighbors. The primary trees that we're harvesting out there are in the, you know, 80 to 90-year-old range. And the Clatsop State Forest does have quite a bit of older age class stands out there comparatively on the landscape. For instance, we've got 67,000 acres on the landscape that are over 60 years old. The Clatsop State Forest administrative unit that we manage is 137,000 acres approximately. Well, 67,000 acres of that is over 60 years old. 48,000 is over 70 years old, and 17,000 acres of it are over 80 years old. And it gets less as the older you get, obviously, due to the history of the lands. But, you know, 80 and 90-year-old timber isn't necessarily very unique. These stands overall just happen to have some, you know, some components of them that were scattered trees, and then this Area 2 of Homesteader, which has gotten a lot of attention, happened to have about an 11-acre inholding of trees that were roughly 115 years old. And we did leave most of those trees. The harvesting in Area 2 of Homesteader has already been completed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the majority of those older, larger trees were intended to be left and, you know, are now still standing after the logging's been done in there.
Well, the current plan is that 70% of the state forest would be managed for harvest and 30% would be managed for other values. Is that roughly?
I guess the whole forest is managed for a integrated suite of values, which is an important thing to know, because even where we're doing, you know, clear-cut harvesting, we have what are called landscape-level strategies that are very significant and important part of our forest management plan, because we leave, you know, components out there everywhere that are adding value to the ecological functioning of the system, you know, specific wildlife habitats, protection of water resources, et cetera. And those are in the form of stream buffers, you know, standing wildlife trees, dead standing trees, you know, and snags, down wood, et cetera. The forest management plan has requirements that are significantly different than minimum Forest Practices Act standards. And of note, you know, we require stream buffers to be left on all streams that run water all year round, which are referred to as perennial streams, even ones that don't have fish. That's a policy choice that the Board of Forestry has made on how they want to manage their lands, which is different from the Forest Practices Act, and we have larger buffers on most of our fish streams as well. To contrast that with some of the other strategies we have with green trees, the Forest Practices Act minimums are 2 trees per acre or snags. You can leave dead standing trees or green trees per acre. And the Forest Management Plan requires an average of 5 green trees per acre and an average of 2 snags per acre. Those aren't applied on every single acre individually, but they're averaged over all of our sales, all of our clear-cut acres in any given fiscal year, which we call an annual operations plan. And we also leave a significant amount of downwood for, you know, ecological function as well. And I know when Trygve Steen was on your show, he commented about, you know, forests are more than just trees and big trees. They specifically noted the snags, downwood, et cetera. And those are very important parts of all of the areas in which we harvest. So it's not just 70% for production emphasis and 30% for conservation. There's a continuum of forest conditions that our stands are going through. And even when we do regeneration harvesting, we're leaving components out there that over time and across the landscape are going to make for a very robust and rich ecological system out there. And that's that in and of itself is a huge distinction about how state forests are managed from how other most other landowners' objectives are, you know, locally here. And that I don't want to confuse either this 70-30 with a proposed strategy that the board, you know, was exploring and having staff within ODF explore, which was a land allocation approach to manage the state forest with 70% in a production emphasis and 30% in a conservation emphasis, and have some different strategies than we do today at the landscape level potentially, and they haven't decided on anything. But today we have these landscape level strategies that apply everywhere, yet 30% of the landscape is specifically mapped and targeted to be matured into these layered stands and older forest structure stands, if that helps explain that.
It does, and you just touched on something that maybe answers another concern or criticism they had, which was that 30% that's allowed to grow and mature and so on, they felt that could move. In other words, that 30% wasn't permanent, but at some future time, that could be moved into the 70, and something else could be moved into the 30, something that was already logged, perhaps. Is that true?
Well, again, state forest policies are adaptive, and there is change. And, you know, we're in the midst of a policy discussion, the board is right now, on planning for state forests. So I don't want to give any, you know, clear indications that says those are never going to change, because the board is considering plan adaptations right now. They're meant to stay on the landscape and function for a very long time. However, you know, when the counties deeded these lands to the Board of Forestry, one of the premises was that they would be actively managed. Therefore, this particular forest management plan, although it prescribes you're going to have an array of forest conditions in some relative percentages, it does indicate clearly that over time and across the landscape, those could move, but you would maintain the relative percentage of those forest conditions on your landscape at any given time.
Mm-hmm. I guess you can understand how some people would sort of feel or wish that there could be some areas that would be sort of left in perpetuity to mature and become what we hear about, you know, those old growth forests with their particular characteristics and particular inhabitants, particular animals, and so on. I guess it's kind of sad to think that kids in the future might read about old growth forests but never actually be able to see one.
Yeah, I'd just throw in a real quick comment there, Roger.
Sure, please do.
Part of, you know, state forests constitutes about 3% of all the forest land in Oregon. The federal government manages and owns over 50% of all the forest land in Oregon, and the remainder through private entities, through large industrial and small land, you know, woodland owners. Given that range of ownership types and with very limited activity going on the federal parcels, you know, there is a huge suite of opportunities for folks to go visit older stands, which are facing some forest health issues, even though they're being left to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we spend a lot of time talking about the 3% of state forest lands here. I'm just trying to put it in a scale that, you know, there's no, in my mind, threat of losing that opportunity of seeing a stand that's 1,000 years old. You know, as we talked about, just across the river, you know, there is a stand of cedar that's, you know, darn near 1,000 years old.
Helen Westbrook was on the program recently, and she argued that in Clatsop County, at least, the only public forest is the state forest. And so she was saying Clatsop County maybe needs to be thought of a little differently in that regard in terms of what's preserved and so on. Any thoughts about that?
Well, that's true that there really are no significant federal lands within Clatsop County. And, you know, the state forest do provide a great place for the citizens to go out and enjoy the forest and access the forest. We have a very well-developed transportation system that's open to the public. I encourage anyone, you know, listening to go explore the state forest. We have maps at our office down there on Highway 202 by the fairgrounds that you can acquire. We have, you know, great camping and hiking facilities on the forest. We have both non-motorized and motorized recreational opportunities for people to get out and enjoy the forest. You know, so it's a very diverse array of opportunities we provide for people to go and enjoy the forest. And there's a variety of interests that people have and things they want to do when they go out into the forest. Not everybody goes out to the forest just to see old growth or old trees. There's a whole host of, you know, there's a range of things that people want to do out there, and we provide a spectrum. You know, one of the campgrounds we have, Henry Ryerson Spruce Run on the Lower Nehalem, you know, it's in an area that has, it was a logging camp, Yonkers and Wicks Logging Camp, but it's a area that within the campground itself, there's trees, they're very open-grown large trees that are over 100 years old, and those trees go make you go wow, and you can camp right there. It's on the banks of the Nehalem River. It's a beautiful place, well-developed place. Mm-hmm. So there are, you know, places like that that are very accessible and designed for human interaction, you know, to experience these types of things that are there.
Well, as you manage forest land, you decide how it's going to be, if it's going to be harvested, how it's going to be harvested. Is it going to be clear cut? Is it going to be thinned? How are those determinations made? And what's the proportion? How much do we clear cut? How much do we thin? Clear cut is cheaper to do, I guess, right?
It's definitely more economically efficient, but it goes really back to that fundamental landscape design. So I had mentioned previously that there's a map that shows on the forest where 30% of our ownership is going to be developed into these older forest structure and laird stand structures. Therefore, those would only be thinnings, for instance, to go into there. Then we also do thinnings in younger stands. There's a whole host of stands in ages, you know, 25 to early 40s that are very dense. They were plantations that were planted from previous harvesting, and those trees need room to grow, to mature. Otherwise, they'll grow up and be skinny and have disproportionate crowns, for instance, and then the ranges or options that they might have to stay on the landscape for a long time could be limited based on their instability. So we do a lot of thinning in younger stands. We do thinning in stands right now primarily that are only of the older stands that are targeted to go to these, you know, complex forest conditions or layered or older forest stand structures. And then we do a lot of regeneration harvesting in the area in between, you know, mature stands, and those primarily, you know, 60 to 80 year old stands is where we do a lot of our regeneration harvesting.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your time, and thanks for helping us understand the state forests and your overall jobs.
Well, thanks, Roger. Thanks, glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I really appreciate the opportunity.
The amount of revenue from the Clatsop State Forest is substantial. In just the last 3 months of last year, $5,848,000 was paid out. A large chunk goes to the county, and another big portion goes to the schools. And Clatsop College received $420,000. Clatsop Care Center and Sunset Transportation each got over $70,000. The port took in $55,000, and law enforcement received $52,000. The money is distributed to lots of smaller taxing districts, too. At the bottom of the list was the Mist-Birkenfeld Rural Fire Protection District, which received $1.46. You've been listening to The Human Beat. Our guests today were District Forester Dan Goody and Assistant Forester Ron Zilli from the Astoria District of the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening. ¶¶